Welcome to Under the Radar, a show about independent iOS app development. I'm Marco Arment.
And I'm David Smith. Under the Radar is usually not longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
So it's time for our year in review episode, because it's December, and that apparently juices numbers. Just kidding. No. Guess what? You all listened to Under the Radar this year. Thank you, and congratulations. Yeah, so we're going to talk about continuing our series from last time about the tools we use to make our apps. I always love this kind of thing because I always learn something. Like whenever I hear or see how someone else works, I always pick up some little detail, either, you know, a new app that I might, you know, get value from myself, or even just, you know, little workflow things people do, like keyboard shortcuts they use that I didn't know about, or, you know, ways they arrange their tools, or ways that different things interact with each other. And so I love this kind of thing. So last time we did coding and design apps, and we're going to start today with how we do testing, and that is, you know, that's kind of broad. And I think while we've discussed testing before, we've mostly discussed, like, you know, unit testing style tests and why neither of us seem to make that much use of those. This is not necessarily about that. This is more about, like, how do we run our apps on, like, test devices, test simulators, like all that kind of stuff, and test how the app works. I'm sure the test people have, like, a kind of, you know, word of, like, looking down upon that kind of testing. But anyway, that's the kind of testing we do most often, and that's a huge part of development. So I'm curious, Dave, you know, I see your list here, and a quick spoiler, I have used almost none of these things, so I'm really looking forward to learning from you how I should be using more apps to facilitate my app testing.
Sure. So I think, because like last week or last episode, we talked about essentially the, you know, the design tools to design the app. And then we talked about the coding tools we use to make the app. And then today is sort of the, like, now that it's made, how do we make sure that it works? And that's, you know, like you said, we tend to, I think, lean towards what is, I don't know, maybe integration or functional testing. Like we,
that's, you
know,
I the run word. The,
yeah, it's like I run the app on either a simulator or on a testing device. And then I play with it and I tested it out and I try different things and I try it on different phones and I try it on different configurations. And there are different tools that I find helpful to kind of streamline that process and make it more efficient. I think the majority of my work on that is done in the simulator. I think unless I'm doing something that cannot be done in the simulator, I will first do it in the simulator just because it is so much quicker and you don't have to deal with an extended build and run loop and all of the issues that you run into. And it's much easier, I find, to, you know, sort of if something goes wrong, I can just delete the app and reinstall it and, you know, or do a full reset of the entire device. If I'm trying to, say, for example, do some testing around permission dialogues and things which are possible but awkward to reset on an actual device. And so I'll very often be using the simulator. And to do that, I have two tools that I find super helpful for making the simulator just be a little bit more useful. The first is a tool called SimGenie, which is actually made by Curtis Herbert, who's the maker of Slopes. And it is a tool that lets you control a lot of aspects of the simulator. And the one, the feature that I use most often with it is it lets you simulate GPS coordinates and sort of replay GPS tracks inside of the simulator, which is so helpful because when I'm, you know, I've worked on a lot of location-based workout apps, and in these, it's very inconvenient to, if you want to test a feature, to have to go for a walk and, you know, like, I remember a couple years ago, I was working on a feature for Pedometer Plus Plus, and I wanted to make sure there weren't any memory leaks in my, like, location tracking system. And so it's like, well, really what I want to do is go for, like, you know, a 48-hour walk and see what happens, you know, really push it to the limit there. And so, like, in SimGenie, I just loaded up an extremely long GPS track, ran it on my computer, and just let it run for hours and hours and hours, I mean, just, like, for a couple of days, and make sure that nothing was growing, you know, in the instrument panel and things. And so it's a tool that I find just super helpful. If you do anything that involves location, it's a great tool. It has a bunch of other things that it, you know, in terms of tools for adjusting things inside of the simulator, but that's the feature that I use it most for. And then the other one on the simulator is there's a tool called Rocket Sim, which is more on the capturing what the simulator is looking like, which is a different kind of testing. It's often like I'm trying to capture a screenshot, or I'm trying to record a video to try and make to record something. It's also useful, not necessarily in a testing context, but also for creating promotional materials and things. You can end up with a really nice bezel around the simulator in the image that it creates, you know, so it gives it a nice like frame that actually looks like an iPhone, not like a Mac app. And so it's just a very useful sort of tool for that. But those two ways are ways that I can be a bit more efficient with the simulator, do a bit more, and then either gather marketing materials, or if I'm gathering like screenshots for things that I need to later reference in terms of I found these issues, it's a better way of getting better screenshots than necessarily just the simulator itself.
Okay, I'm just looking at these two apps, SimGenie and RocketSim, that you just mentioned. Why have I not been using these all this time?
Because we haven't done Under the Radar tools episode. This is why we need to do this.
Typical of my life, I often don't ask for help with things, and that extends to lots of different areas, including I often don't know about apps that I could try that could help me a lot in my development work, and even just looking at just the very first web pages of SimGenie and RocketSim, both of these, I'm like, oh my god, wow, I want that, like everything, like I'm gonna buy these immediately. Also, I very much appreciate the Game Genie style artwork on the SimGenie icon. That is fantastic. There's so much here. Like, I don't have any need for location testing, at least at the moment. I sure did when I was doing my Fire Island driving app. That would have been nice instead of me riding around in the winter on an e-bike across the sand with my freezing hands and my phone and a little mount on the front of the bike.
Sure,
this could have been a little more convenient. beyond location stuff, I'm seeing all these different features in both of these apps, especially SimGenie, like stuff I could really use. I see open URL and trigger URL schemes. I see jumping quickly to the data folders, different things like sending push notifications. Like, oh man, because I know like there is so much capability built into the iOS simulator, but it's so hard to access a lot of the times, or it requires you to go look up commands on Stack Overflow to do some stuff via the command line interface or stuff. And I never want to do any of that stuff. And so to have a nice GUI that can just instantly jump me into these features, that matters so much for development. Because this is the kind of stuff these shortcuts might save me, 30 seconds nine times in one session. It's that kind of saving. So that's the kind of thing that, and when you make things easier in testing, you test them more. Like you were just saying, you were able to do like these long runs of location simulation to be able to do things like test long-term memory usage. That's the kind of thing that you, if you didn't have a tool to easily do that, you probably just wouldn't test it. Or maybe you would take one long hike and test it once and be like, all right, I think I'm good. And that would be it. Whereas like when testing becomes easier, you do more of it. So this is, I think this, using this kind of app is a really good idea from, as I see from the outside now. And I know this is a kind of our Christmas episode. Looking at some of these features, these apps, it's like I'm opening things on Christmas. Like, oh, wow, yes, I want that. Oh, wow, what a great gift that'll be. Like, yeah, this will be great. So thank you.
Sure. Oh, sure. And I think it's the kind of thing where I think, yeah, it's Xcode and the iOS simulators and all that are really powerful. And I think sometimes that power comes with a complexity that makes it really challenging for Apple to expose all of the full capabilities of of these tools to us. And so very, very often I feel like some of these tools are things which are wrappers around functionality. Like they have the functionality to clean up the status bar on your iPhone. So if you're taking screenshots, you want to have it say 9:41 as the time, and you want to have rather than saying no connection, you want it to say that it has full Wi-Fi and, five bars of 5G or whatever. And there is a way to do that at the command line, but I can never remember how to do it. And it's always like I'm digging around on old Stack Overflows, and then it's like, oh, it used to work on this version of Xcode. Now you need to change the command to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to just have someone else who's built the app that has all of the right things for that, so that when I'm taking a screenshot to, add to my app in the App Store, in App Store Connect, it's just there. I just hit the button that says, tidy up. you know, tidy up status bar, and it does it. And I'm not spending 10 minutes, 20 minutes trying to work out the right thing, or just giving up and then opening Photoshop and manually trying to do it and having the fonts not look quite right or whatever, like, which is something I've done many times. And so I find these tools very helpful for that. Like, it's just these little wrappers that make your life just that little bit easier. But if you know, use this all the time, like, these are tools that are always running on my computer whenever I'm doing work, because inevitably I'm going to the simulator, and there's just little things that they will make better and easier inside the simulator as a result.
Yeah, and again, like, that kind of thing adds up. Anything with, like, the build, test, run, you know, kind of workflow of building an app where you're just constantly, you know, editing the code, going back to the simulator, building and running, going, checking again, trying something else, moving stuff around, like, anything that makes that loop faster and lower friction pays huge dividends in not only just, like, sheer accumulated time, and not only in quality of the resulting product, as I was saying earlier, but also just the pleasantry of development, or the grind of development. Like, if you feel like that cycle that you're doing so many times throughout the day, if you feel like you are hitting friction on one of those points, like, there's no worse feeling when building software than when you feel like you're fighting your tools, or your tools are fighting you. And then the opposite is also true. When you have tools that just get problems out of your way, or that give you amazing capabilities, or that make things smoother and easier for you, it's an amazing feeling. And you can really start flying when you're developing. And that, you know, that keeps you in the zone more, it keeps you happier, it keeps you more productive, and I think it makes better output.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I guess the other place that I'm doing very similar things to these kinds of simulator tools is this year, especially in iOS 18, we had a bunch of improvement in terms of when you're actually doing these same operations on an actual device, because now we have iPhone mirroring in iOS and macOS, where you can run, you know, essentially it looks like the simulator in terms of you have a phone, you know, a phone window on your Mac, but it is actually your code running in real time on, you know, on an actual testing device. And I find that super helpful for that same kind of reduction in, it's weird, because it's not that much of a burden to, like, pick up a phone off my desk, right? But it is something that is that much, just a little bit less efficient, or a little bit of friction that I don't like. Whereas now I can just, you know, be doing the interaction, doing the on-device testing still on my Mac with a, you know, with a mouse tapping around. And some of the gestures are a bit weird, and there's things that aren't perfect, but it is still very helpful in that regard. And I very much appreciate that as a feature, because it kind of makes device testing, because there are some things you test which you just have to test on device. There's no equivalent in the simulator, or it's just ultimately, you know, as much as simulator testing is useful, it is still a simulation of what it's going to actually be on a device. And so you don't want to rely on that as the final thing. And so you want to ultimately test. So iPhone mirroring has been super helpful for that. And related and similar in some ways, the way that I use Rocket Sim for the simulator, I use a tool called Bezel for on-device testing, which is a tool which, when you plug in your phone, will show you essentially a real-time stream coming from your phone as a window on your Mac, which isn't interactive. It's doing essentially a screen recording, but it is super helpful for capturing screenshots and videos and those kinds of tools, those kind of things. You know, if you're doing marketing or help documentation or things like that, it's really nice, and it has a really nice interface to be able to export those with the appropriate bezels around them, and, you know, make nice videos that are, or GIFs or things. Like, you can, if there are things that you're wanting to collect from your device, you know, taking an actual screenshot, you know, pushing volume up and the side button of your phone is not going to end up with nearly as nice as a result as something you can get from Bezel as a result of it being built for that purpose.
Yeah, this looks great too. And there's been so many, like, you know, hacks where, like, oh, well, if you can do it through QuickTime, but then it will have these downsides and these limitations, and then you'll have this resulting video that you have to process in this way. And it looks like Bezel takes a lot of those steps and limitations away. And that's, again, make it easy and everyone's happy. All right. We are brought to you this episode by listenlater.net. There is so much great educational, helpful content online now. The struggle isn't finding something good to read. It's having the time to sit down for 20 minutes and actually read it. So you either save that great article somewhere and never look at it again, I'm familiar with this dynamic, or you just accept that you'll never get around to it and you eventually just close the tab. This is where our friends at listenlater.net come in. You can convert articles to podcasts so you can take them on the go. Email any article's URL to them, and their AI, with its human-like narration, will transform it swiftly into a podcast episode. So you can enjoy your episodes in your personal feed in any podcast app that supports URLs, which is almost all of them. So this is a great service, and it's more than just articles. ListenLater.net can convert email newsletters, PDF attachments, and Google Docs also into podcasts. This is perfect for transforming your work documents, your newsletters, or any text content into enjoyable, listenable formats. Go now to listenlater.net to try it for yourself and stop missing out on great content you don't have the time to read. There's $2 in free credit waiting for you, so there's no reason not to try it. And you can also get up to 25% extra credits on your purchases. Don't miss out. Head to listenlater.net and grab your bonus credits today. That URL one more time is listenlater.net. Our thanks to listenlater.net for their support of this show and Relay. All right, so moving into a different category now, source code and source control. This is something, you know, this is one area where I actually do use a GUI app to save me from myself and the command line. It's one of the only areas that so far that I have done this before listening to you tell me why I should do these things. And this is, I use the app Git Tower, or now it's just called Tower. It used to be called Git Tower. This is my Git app of choice. It has been for a number of years now. And I find, you know, I'm able to use Git on the command line in a fairly basic way. I can do, you know, basic, you know, checkouts and commits and pulls and pushes and adds and all that stuff. But when it comes to, like, branching and merging and any kind of, like, undoing anything I did, every time I would have to go look up on Stack Overflow or something, like, what's the command to do to make this branch do this thing? And I would often do things subtly wrong, and it was always kind of a mess. And Tower allows me to just get rid of all of that stress and just hit a couple of buttons. And I absolutely love both the efficiency of that, and again, also, that the features that it offers, a running theme here, let me make better software. Because, for instance, it has one of my favorite parts of Tower is they have a really good built-in diff viewer. We'll get to that again in a minute. But you know, you can see what you are currently staging, and you can see what each commit contains. And the diff viewer is really nice and really advanced and makes things very obvious what you have changed. And that is a huge relevant thing for programmers. Like, that's incredibly important. And I know that, like, everything I'm seeing in there, I know, like, it's... Anything going on in my entire repository, I will see it. I will see if I'm behind by a bunch and I have to, like, update, like, if I just take out my laptop or something and I haven't used it in a while. Like, there's all these kind of visual cues to tell you what's going on. And all the advanced stuff, like branching and merging and everything, it makes incredibly easy. And therefore, I do it more. So instead of, like, kind of avoiding making branches on the command line because it would take me an extra 20 seconds to Google the right command, you know, before I just wouldn't make very many branches. Now that making branches is like two clicks, I do it more, which is better for my development because I'm using more tools to accomplish more things more in the right ways. And so again, I can't say enough about Tower. I think if you use Git for your source control, and you probably should, I strongly recommend using Tower.
Yeah, and I use exactly the same thing. I use Tower, though strangely, I think I'm still using a very old version of Tower because I don't need many of or any of the very more advanced features of Tower. I just use it. I think I have an old, like, when you could, one of the old times you could buy once version that just, like, because really it's, for me, it's a tool for staging, adding a commit message, doing the occasional branch and merge, and that's it. Like, there's so many things that Git can do, but I think mostly of those run into when you're actually collaborating with other people. You know, if you're needing to do complicated rebasing and merging and things when you have lots of different people who are working on the same code base. And because it's just me, I just use the basics. But I find Tower to be just that much more, I don't know, like, straightforward, and I'm much less likely to make an error. You know, it's one of those funny things where Xcode has, you know, this built into it. But the degree to which that I only use Xcode is, it's sometimes I use the, like, You can get the view, the author's view, which is slightly funny, which is, you know, running, it would used to put, you know, the command line is called git blame, I think, which is, you know, I'm always to blame, which is the slightly funny thing of myself. It's essentially, it's like, how long ago did I make this mistake is the question I'm asking, you know.
And, indie development in a nutshell, I'm always to blame.
I'm always to blame. Like when I ran into this recently where I was literally, there was a bug I had and I, you know, it's like, what was I thinking? And I look back and it's like, well, I don't know. It's like 4 year ago, me thought this was a good idea. 4 year ago, me was wrong. This was a bad idea. But it's definitely use that view inside of Xcode to kind of do that kind of comparisons where I'm inside the source code itself. Or sometimes I'll do the comparison view there, but of, you know, comparing to a previous, commit. But mostly Tower is the place that I go to do that. And I think in some ways, as much as like Xcode's, you know, actually commit and control stuff, I find it's just awkward in a way that, like, in some ways, I think it is a good thing to have a secondary tool that you use to actually commit it, because I think it is useful. And this is a theme that'll come up a couple of times in the next two tools I'm going to talk about, is I think it is useful to have a context switch between I'm writing the code and here is the code that I want to become the canonical version of the code. That it is good that you have to take a breath, take a moment, go into another tool, look at the code you just wrote, you know, in terms of you need to look at it, stage it, look at the diffs that, you know, what's actually changed, and then commit it, and then actually send it in. Because inevitably what I will find is that I'm catching issues or bits of debug code that shouldn't be in the, you know, shouldn't be in the actual thing that I commit to the repository, but is in there that I may not catch if I was doing that commit inside of Xcode itself. And so I use Tower. There's so many of these, and I feel like 90% of your, which one is the right one for you, is probably based on which is the first one you ever used. because you just like, it's sort of like the, you know, which way is up in a first person shooter, you know, do you pull forward or pull back? And it's like, whichever way it was the first time is what you get used to. And so like, I'm just used to Git Tower because that's what I learned on. And so I'm used to it, that there's countless others of these, and but it's like using something is the great first step that I think is very important.
Yeah. And I like the idea of like the context switch, because I realize that is kind of how I use it too, that it is almost a way that I simulate code review by being one person. You know, it's kind of hard to have someone else review the code I'm committing, but I do use Tower that way. Like that's one of the reasons why the diff view and, you know, and the built-in integration between, like, you know, the checkboxes to stage things and the diff and everything. That's also important to me, because what I'm using it for is not just, all right, select all, commit, go. I'm actually reviewing everything I commit before I commit it. And Tower makes that both, you know, nice and easy, but also, you're right, I do like having a different app for that. And it kind of puts me into like a different mode. Like, all right, I'm here, I've prepared everything. Now let me review what I've prepared, and then I will choose to commit this, you know. And maybe that's like a little bit, maybe I should be using branches more, and that maybe that's a little bit too heavyweight of a process, but that's, you know, maybe I'll get there someday. That's how I work now. And I love having the different tool for that, and a tool that is so good at that. And you're right, like, I don't use probably more than 10% of the features of Tower, because, you know, we're just working alone here, and my needs are fairly simple. But even that 10% that I use is done really well. So I am on the current like subscription priced one, and I have no problem with that. I think it's worth every penny.
And I think my next tool actually is very similar to the thing that you were just discussing in terms of like running your own code reviews when you're by yourself, or, you know, don't have the formal structure that you need to do that. Another tool I found super helpful is a thing called Juxtacode. And by the way, we'll have links to all these in the show notes. So if it's, you know, I don't need to spell it out, but Juxtacode is a tool which is about showing, I guess, directory level diffs between different commits inside of your Git history, if that makes any sense. So you can, you know, tap on any two commits and it will show you all of the files that have changed between those two commits and how they've changed, which is something that I've gotten into the habit of using as a kind of code review process before I actually will, you know, publish an update. I open up, you know, so in Tower, I'm doing all of my like daily or, you know, feature by feature commits as I go. And then when I'm actually getting ready to submit it to the App Store, I open Juxtacode, tap the, you know, the last published commit and the commit that I'm about to try and publish. And then I will go through, you know, it has a very convenient view where you sort of say next, 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 and it just jumps you to all the different things that have changed.
Oh, that's really
and
nice.
And it's a way for me to make sure that I'm, you know, there's nothing silly in here. And this is yet another context, which is very helpful. Like, it's a totally different app. It's a different kind of mindset I'm in, and I'm doing a code review. I'm looking at these changes and saying, you know, is there something in here, A, that shouldn't be? Is there some, you know, some debug code or some thing that was in there? You know, like, I have definitely, you know, sometimes when I'm testing, I'll go into like my membership management system, you know, for my subscription, and I'll just be like, return true for does have membership.
Yep.
Just because it makes it easier. And I have caught myself using this method to not publish that to the App Store, which would have been problematic.
Bad.
bad. And so, like, I've caught myself doing this because it's like, that's a bit of code that should never have been committed, but it's just at some point it got, you know, caught up in some other commit and change. But it was this last line of defense between, you know, myself and the App Store. And so it's a really helpful tool for that. Another, if you don't want to use this tool, which I would strongly recommend, similarly, you can do lots of things with, you know, in Tower or something, you can select two commits and then say, like, you know, generate diff. And then send that to a tool like Kaleidoscope, which is a great diff viewer, or just file merge, which is like the very basic version. But personally, I find having a purpose-built tool for this has been very helpful. And it's just that kind of, you know, there are certain things that are great about being a one-person or a small development team. One of the things that's not great is that you don't have lots of eyes on the code. You don't have this kind of sort of checks and balances around making sure that the right things are going in, that you know, sometimes when you look at, you know, sometimes I'll look at an implementation outside of Xcode in a different context and in the scope of the entire change, and I'll be like, oh, that's not right. Like, this was, you know, this part of the code I built when I started building this feature and forgot that I need to update it to what the final implementation is and things like that. And so it just sort of gives you this higher level perspective. It's like you're zooming out on your code. And so that's a tool that I find super helpful. Essentially save me from myself, because I am always to blame. And as a result, I need to do all the things I can do to kind of catch my own mistakes.
This is really, that's an interesting perspective. Like, I've never done this, but you're right. I would probably like this. Again, this has been a very expensive episode for me. Thank you.
Oh, sure. And the nice thing is many of these tools are small indie developers. So, you know, maybe many of them are maybe even listening to this episode. So if you are one of these people, I thank you very much for your service, because it has been super helpful. And these tools help me kind of, you know, get things, just do my job better, right? And that's ultimately the main goal with any of these tools is to just, you know, the core part of our work is writing the code. And then there's all these things that we can tack onto the sides to make it a little bit better, to improve our code quality a little bit more. And, you know, it's wonderful when we have those. And so, like, you know, these tools just help us in that way, which is so wonderful. So the last thing that I wanted to mention, there's something that I've added into my source management somewhat recently, is using Xcode Cloud as a continuous integration system, essentially. And I don't use this for continuous integration in the, you know, the testing sense where I'm having unit tests run on a regular basis and anything like that. I don't use unit tests. We've talked about that before. You may have a different perspective on that than I do, but that is what works for me. But what I find very helpful with Xcode Cloud, is it saves me, and again, it's saving me from myself, of it is giving me the confidence that whatever is in the App Store is something that is repeatable in a way that isn't dependent on anything about my machine. Because one of the challenges that I run into sometimes, I don't know if you run into this too, is because I'm the only one who's ever building the app. It's not like I'm in a team where there's a bunch of us who are all building it. And so if there was some file which I didn't actually check in and accidentally added to the project, but isn't, you know, is referencing a file outside of the, you know, the Git directory or something, which is something I've done many times. And then, you know, I go to a new machine, I check out my project and I try and build it and it won't build because there's a file in a documents directory somewhere or on the desktop or like weird places like that, that I just, you know, this is terrible behavior, but these are things that have happened to me in the past. And so I like Xcode Cloud, not necessarily for most of its, well, essentially all I'm having it do is run a build from a particular commit. And it gives me kind of confidence that I would be able to recreate that build in the future with confidence, and that it's, you know, I'm not accidentally leaving some file out or some resource out. And so I use it for that. I don't use it for anything else. You know, otherwise it's fine. I don't, you know, it's Xcode Cloud isn't any great thing. I can't recommend it beyond it does the job.
That's interesting. I've literally never even considered using it because I kind of thought it was only about CI kind of uses that I wouldn't use. So maybe I'll check that out as well. Because I think for a simple use like that, I could probably give it a shot.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. Enjoy the holidays and the new year, and we will see you next year.
Sounds good. Bye.